Hello and welcome to the Nourish Balance Thrive podcast. My name is Christopher Kelly and today I'm joined by Douglas Hilbert. Hi, Doug.
How you doing, Chris?
I'm good, thank you. Doug's an amazing guy. The reason I wanted to get him on today is because he's just published a new book. It's called Letters to My Son, Choosing Yourself First. And it is available on Amazon. I will link to it in the show notes for this page. And Doug's an amazing guy. I think he's been through a lot, as we'll find out in this interview. Doug's someone I've been working with for a while now. We've done quite a lot of testing together. And reading this book, it really opened my eyes to just how much you've been through. You've been through a lot.
We kind of got into a little bit of it when we started working together, but probably not nearly the detail of how bad it was.
Why don't we start there? Why don't you tell me about how bad it was? What was it like when things were at the worst?
Probably the worst, it would be that day I would decide to go to the hospital or go to a drug rehab or something, or be being in the hospital and basically coding, flatlining on the table, which necessarily wasn't what I know now wasn't necessarily having a withdrawal death kind of thing. I was having a vagal reaction to getting an IV, and my body just kind of temporarily shut down and blacked out, but it flatlined the the EKG or whatever, and everybody panicked, and I just kind of woke back up like I had passed out, and everybody thought I was going to die. So that was probably the worst physical day. But you know, it's just years of mental torture with drugs or alcohol or overeating, smoking, or on the other side, working 100 hours a week, or when I was a triathlete, training 40, 50 hours a week, just really using anything I could to kind of chase the dragon, I guess, or run from my own issues. So,
right.
Yeah.
And then, you've just been in the hospital, you flatlined on this EKG, and what kind of physical shape were you in at that time?
Oh, it was terrible. Probably for the year before that, we had some businesses fail and some family things because of that, and lost a ton of money. And my response was I'd quit racing to try and save the business, which was, looking back, a very bad decision, because I basically did my last race, sold all my stuff, and quit, and just went straight to working. And as that started to fail, then I just really had no motivation to do anything. So it's like, 2 o'clock, I'm going to happy hour. 7 o'clock, guys show up for dinner. So I basically just ate and drank the amount of calories like a triathlete would without working out, and put on about 50 pounds in a year. And at that point it was, I didn't like being overweight because I'd never really been overweight before. So I thought, well, amphetamines and cocaine work really well for losing weight, so I'll just add those in, and then I can eat and drink all day and just do drugs to lose weight. And so I was a wreck. I don't really have any photos because I wasn't really looking for those moments to be captured, I guess, for life. But yeah, it was real bad. That's about all I did.
It's whenever I see those before and after photos, I think, wow, this is slightly contrived. Like, when I wasn't feeling so good, the last thing I felt like doing was like taking my shirt off and taking a picture of myself in the mirror. It's a really weird thing to do, isn't it?
Yeah, there's probably some like group party photos floating around. I know for a long time the worst photo I had was my driver's license, because I had to get it renewed during that time, and I just looked just trashed. I mean, just no life in me at all. And I recently had to get it updated, so they don't let you keep it, so I don't have that picture. But when I got healthy again, people would card me for stuff, and they'd be like, "That's not even you." It was such a shocking difference. I think really the only way it would have been worse would have been if I died. And of course I would have been dead, so I wouldn't have noticed it, but that was pretty much the next step. So
about as low as you can go.
I wasn't really interested in going to jail, so yeah, it would probably been death at that point. So,
And then how's life now? Like, what's the main changes that you've noticed?
So I did three different rehab stints. Like, I did my first one when I was 21, and it was very, kind of AA based and, spiritual Christian based. And you know, that worked for about 7 months. And that's when I found cycling and triathlon, which really became my way of channeling all that energy and staying relatively, sober through that period. And, some people say, you're replacing one addiction with another, which, it's true. It was a healthier addiction than, drinking right. and doing drugs all the time. And then when I stopped racing, I didn't have that outlet. So that's when it occurred again. So drinking and drugs was always kind of the solution to major life crisis, mm-hmm. I guess, because I'd never really developed any other solution. So the last rehab I did was very science-based, which, after doing two kind of AA, NA, spiritual-based programs that didn't work, I wasn't willing to go through it again. So I found a doctor that worked all on science and really taught me a lot of the way the brain works, dopamine, and, something that I could get on board with. And understand, and it made sense to me. Mm-hmm. I think Dr. Robert Lustig, one of the first guys with like the insulin hypothesis. He has a quote that I like: biochemistry drives behavior. And that's something that I could kind of jump into, like, okay, I'm not broken, I'm not sinning, I'm not an evil person. There's something going on, on a biochemical level, that's causing me to respond differently or be addicted to these substances or have these emotional problems. And therapy still helped, but I found that really probably the underlying key was fixing my health. And because I had periods of sobriety for a long time, but I still had anxiety, I still had depression, I still had difficulty in relationships with people, not just romantic ones, but anything. I still had a lot of these, issues that I was dealing with, because even though I was sober, I wasn't really healthy. Mm-hmm. So kind of combining, the physical health and mental health and emotional health and, having a spiritual practice. When I finally got all those four things working together, we've talked many times, I think now is the best I've ever felt, and I'm 37, and I was doing Ironman and racing triathlon in Europe and, competitive and played sports in college. And, it's odd to say I feel better at 37 than I ever did, even when I was sober and doing those things before. Just my health has changed so much. So
that's awesome. I think we might be a generation of people. I'm a little bit older than you, I think. And we're a generation of people that feel better in their late 30s, early 40s than we did when we were 18, which is kind of frightening. But so tell me about, you mentioned depression and fatigue there. So how are your energy levels and how's your mood and outlook now?
Even though we just redid the cortisol and stuff, and even though it's not good, it's 100 times better energy level. I know I've did the genetic testing where I'm a fast caffeine metabolizer. So I've worked down from a pot of coffee or maybe two pots of coffee a day to two cups of half calf. And I can get through the day and I feel good and my thinking's clear. No depression, no anxiety. I was prescribed medication, multiple times for all those things that I just didn't really thought worked, and really they don't know how they work. So it's like, you don't know how this works, but you want to give it to me, and then we're just going to play around and adjust dosage and change pills whenever you feel like it. And mm-hmm. I'm like, that's just not really science to me. Mm-hmm. It just didn't work. So being able to get off all those medications over time and really just take a few supplements that I don't really even take every day, and just eat a healthy diet. It sounds very simple, but it was a multi-year process. But Yeah, I mean, I feel fantastic. You know, even compared to 6 months ago or a year ago, definitely compared to 5 and 10 years ago. So
that's absolutely amazing. And so you've managed to lose, you know, that one of the first things you start with in the book is the 50 pounds of overweight. Mm-hmm. Have you managed to lose all that weight?
Yeah, you know, that was relatively easy, I guess, just because I could go work out, you know, I could get in a calorie deficit. When drinking a lot and doing drugs, you know, food is not really like high on the list anyway. You know, I would start out with the food and I'd gain a lot of weight and then I'd lose a little bit of it with drinking and drugs. And then I'd get sober and then I'm like, okay, I got to start working out. And then I'd go into like crazy exercise mode and diet restriction. And, you know, so I could burn that off. And you know, that was always the running joke kind of at family functions, you know, because people would make comments, oh, you're getting kind of big. And I'm like, yeah, I'm trying to get fat on purpose so I can show you how easy it is to lose the weight. You know, that was kind of my deflection of it. And I think it was easy. You know, the one thing I noticed, I always carried a little extra weight regardless of how much I was doing. So now I don't consider myself an exerciser now. And I'm not necessarily training for anything, but I do what I feel like doing and what my body tells me I'm able to do with HRV and just have fun. But I'm actually probably at a lower body fat percentage than I ever was when I trained and raced. And I think that's mostly, you know, because I was eating the standard American diet, high carbs, and just constantly inflamed. And, you know, from a body image standpoint, and men don't talk about that much, but it's like, you know, that extra 5 pounds, you know, you can't get those abs to show, you know, that bothered me. And now, you know, I can go 2 weeks without working out and my body composition changed the same just from diet, which really is amazing, to me, because I never would have believed that 10 years ago. If somebody told me that, I would have told them they're crazy.
So what are you eating now? I'm kind of interested to know. So the thing that's so fantastic about this book is, certainly at least from my perspective, is this is the catalogue. This is the instructions for achieving this success. And there's some things in here that I recognise. And then there's some things which I've never thought about before, which I thought was really interesting. So maybe we could get into that. But why don't we start with what you're eating right now?
Yeah, so I think before we started working together, I remember a couple of years ago I did blood tests and a doctor wanted to put me on a statin. And I kind of took it for about a month and I really thought about it and I was like, eh, I'm not taking this. And, you know, my mother had been put on a statin and developed type 2 diabetes because of it kind of around the same time. So I knew the risks, but I didn't really know the science. And then it was funny, I had... Yeah, I was sober, but I was still kind of smoking, and I was dating this woman, and she broke up with me, and I didn't take it very well, and so my gut reaction, again, was, I'm going to start training. You know, that was always kind of my go-to. I'm like, well, I'm not going to go back to drinking and doing drugs. You know, I'm going to start CrossFitting, and I'm going to do some Olympic weightlifting, and I'm just going to exercise myself into the ground, because that way I don't have to deal with the issues of this breakup and, you know, how it affected me. And so to go along with that, I had got into cooking actually. And, you know, so I had like one of these weekends where I wasn't doing anything. I'm just moping around and, playing on the internet. And I came across Peter Attia's, I think, his two first big YouTube videos and, you know, just his story of being overweight and swimming 25 miles and being in metabolic syndrome. And I didn't even know what that term was. And then he goes into the details of, you know, your triglycerides are this and your waist size is that and your cholesterol is this. And I'm like, I have that. I've always had that. You know, so I start going back through my old blood work and I'm like, man, my triglycerides were 459 one time and my, you know, free insulin was 14. And, you know, so he went into the ketogenic diet and basically, you know, I'm sitting there watching a YouTube video and I'm like, I'm going to do that. Which is kind of how I've always done everything. I don't have a problem going all in, you know, with Iron Man and stuff. It's like, I'm going to do that. So yeah, so basically since then I've ate ketogenic and, you know, I kind of did it in like 2 weeks. I was already tracking my food on an app And, you know, I was probably eating 200 to 300 grams of carbohydrates and, you know, probably 150 on a bad day, 200 grams of sugar. But I was working out like crazy, doing CrossFit and Olympic weightlifting. So I wasn't putting on weight. I wasn't performing well necessarily, and I wasn't thinking well. And, yeah, I just went right on that ketogenic diet, and there was a little suffering involved the first week or two. It wasn't necessarily easy, but, you know, I was doing the testing, did the urine strips at first, and then I got the breath meter. And then I know when we did our first urine organics acids, it was off the charts. So, you know, once I made that change to the ketogenic diet, really stuck with it. And I think that's been the biggest key to, you know, I wouldn't even say keeping the weight off, keeping the fat off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then just having stable blood sugar during the day, having clear mental thinking. Like, I don't think I could have written this book before.
Right.
I couldn't have organized my thoughts and put it together and had it be coherent, much less probably had the attention span to actually sit there and do it. It's just like, I don't know that I was ever ADD, but I probably had symptoms of it based off my diet, with, you know, just being that high athlete, endurance athlete, carbohydrate diet that, you know, really was, that's all I ever knew until, you know, the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. So I think, yeah, just the ketogenic diet's been huge. And you know, I'm definitely not in metabolic syndrome. I'm definitely not overweight. I'm not over fat, and I feel better, and I think better, and my emotions are better. Blood sugar is better. So really, if there was, you know, from a physical standpoint, that was probably the biggest key to all of it. It was just high fat, high quality fat.
That's awesome.
And low carb. Yeah.
I keep going backwards and forwards on this. So, you know, as you know, I'm doing really well also on a ketogenic diet. And I keep wondering whether I should just tell people to eat this ketogenic diet from the outset. But I know, and you know, I mean, you described it, that it can be a bit rough for the first 2 weeks. And maybe it would be a mistake to recommend to someone who's got a lot of adrenal stress. Maybe they've seen low cortisol on one of these saliva tests to go through that rough patch. But I have to say that all of the guys, they all seem to end up on a ketogenic diet and absolutely love it and don't even want to think about going back. And that's not to say they're never going to eat carbs ever again. It's just that they know that the ketogenic diet is probably going to be their default for the rest of their life. And do you think that's true for you? Do you think you're going to stick to it?
Yeah, I think just with some of the previous health stuff and family history of, you know, diabetes and heart disease and, you know, so I've seen my last blood test, my triglycerides were down to 88. I think my free insulin was at 2. You know, so I don't believe in the whole cholesterol heart disease myth hypothesis that's been out there forever. I mean, I think that's pretty much debunked at this point. So, you know, I think like we've talked, you know, controlling blood sugar and controlling the free insulin and keeping the triglycerides down. You know, that's really the way, and my tests show that's what's working.
Mm-hmm.
Cause I think my grandmother had a heart attack, it was maybe like 10 years ago. And my response to that was, I'm going to be a vegetarian. Well, that's when I ended up having the worst triglyceride numbers and the worst insulin numbers. You know, so I've tried that path. You know, I've tried the standard American diet. I've tried the vegetarian diet. You know, I tried, you know, low carb, paleo, and then basically at ketogenic now. You know, if it keeps those three numbers down,
mm-hmm.
and you know, along with the mental benefits and the clarity of thinking and the better mood, and you know, not having to be on, you know, antidepressants or SSRIs, you know, just generally being well and happier. You know, it's not 100% diet, but I think it was a major key in getting me to this place where then, you know, I was able to work on, hey, I can sit down and meditate now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, my brain still goes a little crazy, but it's not like, unbearable. You know, if I get up and eat, you know, a high carb breakfast and try and sit and go meditate,
Right.
that's like impossible. Just blood sugar is going crazy, and you know, and so I mean, I think that, you know, like with the monks I trained with, they eat like once a day. You know, they definitely are not eating a big high carb standard American diet at breakfast. You know, so they want to go sit and meditate for 2 hours. Yeah, they might get a little hungry, but they're not having any of this blood sugar craziness. And I really think that, you know, and they eat vegetarian, but they're not eating, you know, a bowl of Cheerios and, you know, a whole wheat tortilla and, you know, whatever, you know, no fat yogurt that's all sugar. So, yeah, I really think it's kind of like it's the cornerstone, because I'd always kind of attacked all these other things. I'm going to attack meditation, or, you know, go to counseling, or I'm going to do triathlon. And it's, you know, I never really put that diet piece in there. And I think when I finally put the diet piece in there, all the other things that I was working on, you know, like my body could finally maybe relax or get out of that crazy state of unhealthiness that was underlying everything. So then everything else I could work on really just fell into place and became much easier. So yeah, you know, unless my tests get worse, I really see no reason getting off the ketogenic diet. You know, I know there's no studies, and you know, people want to maybe criticize that, or they hypothesize and it might not be healthy long term. But for me, as long as, you know, I feel good and I'm happy and the tests are coming back, you know, low inflammation, low triglycerides, low free insulin, and stable blood sugar, I think I would never stop it.
Yeah, I feel the same
Yeah.
way, and you know, I'm going to keep testing, and if I see something in the test results, or if I learn something new, then sure, I will spin on a dime. But I just it just seems unlikely at this stage. But I'm definitely going to remain open to the possibility that there's long-term harm, and keep looking at that. And I think that's probably the key, isn't it? To not, you know, the only time I've ever come undone is when I've not been open to the idea of new possibilities and change. That's kind of a dangerous place to be, right? Especially if what you believe in doesn't really work very well.
Yeah, it was funny because I was taking notes yesterday because I started writing my blog again, and it was like every time I thought I knew everything, I was totally wrong. It was just, yeah, so just being open, and that's probably one of the unfortunate things, especially in the diet industry, and you know, maybe fitness to some extent, is the dogmatic approaches people have, and then the, you know, little micro wars between, you know, paleo and keto or vegetarians. You know, it's like, you know, we're all eating
Real food.
better, yeah, real food, and better than the standard American diet. You know, so we're all a lot closer to the norm. But you know, fighting and books and all that kind of stuff, I guess they sell better when there's some kind of inflated
Conflict, yeah.
controversy, right? Yeah, you know, and I think that's just human nature to be somewhat, you know, dogmatic. And you know, I catch myself, because people ask me a lot of questions, and I do some coaching, that, you know, they're like, oh, what's your philosophy? And I'm like, I don't really have one, other than helping you figure out what works for you. And if that's a vegan diet, great. If it's ketogenic, you know, or from training, you know, it's, some people need and they thrive on high mileage and they perform well, and some people don't. And so it's very individualized. So yeah, I've had to kind of step back anytime I think there's one answer, and just really be open that there may be one answer for each person, but you know, there's what, 3 billion people on the planet, so that's 3 billion answers. So anytime I want to think I'm right, yeah, I'm not right 100% of the time for everyone. So yeah, it's interesting. So
It is. And tell me about your writing. So, there's a whole bunch of things that I get everybody to do. So if you sign up for a Nourish Balance Thrive program, you do some testing with me, then there's a bunch of things that I insist everyone does, and one of the things we've already talked about, the diet. And then the sleep part, I think, is non-negotiable. And then you don't have to be an Ironman triathlete, but I do think you should walk. Like, I think the walking is non-negotiable. But and then we've already talked, you mentioned the meditation, which I think is really helpful. But tell me about your writing, because writing is something I really, really struggle with. I don't mind talking, but I'm really bad at writing. So tell me about your writing and how that's been able to help you.
Yeah, so I'm kind of the opposite. I would much rather write than talk. So, you know, I've had to give a presentation about a month ago, and I'm like, I want to throw up in the bathroom and run away. You know, it's like before giving this talk. You know, I don't know what it, you know, maybe it's always been that way. I know my grandmother was an English teacher, and she owned daycare centers. So I think it was something that my brother and I, she was really influential in our very young education, because we went to her daycare center. So that, you know, 0 to 6 years old, you know, she was there. So I think it's something we both have. My brother's an attorney, so obviously he can read really well. He can write really well. You know, so I think it's a skill that we were both given at a young age. You know, to learn how to put the thoughts down and kind of how it should flow. You know, how to make an argument. You know, how to do an explanation. How to research. And you know, for me, I've just found it was very cathartic. You know, one of the things when people go to, you know, a treatment center for drug or alcohol is that they usually, you know, have you write these, kind of letters to people you have issues with, not to send them to them, but just to get it out of yourself. And so a couple of times when I've done that, there's a very cathartic kind of experience. James Altucher, he's a writer. And he had been through a lot of the same business losses, you know, that I had been through, and he was very vulnerable and open in his writing. And I thought, well, I'm just going to start writing a blog, and I don't really care if anybody reads it. I'm writing it for me, and just getting my thoughts out. Whereas somebody else may be able to have a conversation, you know, with a good friend or a loved one or their spouse. You know, that, you know, I had done tons of counseling, psychiatrist, cognitive behavioral therapy, and I'd walk out of there after an hour of talking, no better. And it wasn't even a cathartic experience, it was more of a challenge. But just when I started writing and organizing my thoughts, one, it kind of helped me move along the path. And then there was some vulnerability in it, especially publishing it versus just writing for myself. You know, so yeah, you know, if I was to go out and relapse tomorrow and be doing drugs on the street and somebody that read my book saw me, there'd kind of be an issue. You know, somebody would bring it up. So some of it is an accountability with, you know, being public about this kind of stuff. But yeah, the writing, it's just something that's always worked and I've always been, you know, relatively good at, and, you know, more of an introvert, I think. Yeah. I'd much rather write somebody an email and have a discussion than have an argument with them in person. It's just because if it's emotional and then, you know, I kind of lose my train of thought and don't perform very well in that environment. But if I can write and think and rewrite and maybe I shouldn't say that. You know, I've always done better that way. And yeah, one of the other things from treatment, it was, you know, the really simple thing in one of the chapters in the books was, you know, writing a gratitude list, you know, relying on drugs and alcohol. I mean, there's somewhat of a escapism, and that escape is of everything that sucks in life. And you're getting so myopic on the negative things and then completely, you know, ignoring all the good things. You know, things aren't perfect now and then you have struggles now, but it's, you know, any time during the day, if I sit down and write down 5 things I'm grateful for, and it really just changes and shifts my whole mindset. You know, my kids are healthy. You know, we have running water. We have electricity. We have enough food today. We have a roof over our head. I'm grateful for all those things. What else do I really need?
Yeah. So you do that on a daily basis then? You're just like, just at some random moment in the day, you'll just sit down and write those things down?
Yeah, I mean, I tried to like schedule it like once a night, like kind of a recap the day, and that's how it started. But now, yeah, you know, if I'm just in a bad mood or a funk, yeah, just sitting down really quick and jotting that down, or just sitting down and doing a 5-minute meditation, or I'll drive somewhere for, you know, I have to drive a lot for real estate, and I'll just park my car and just sit there for 5 minutes and just breathe. Or, you know, so, you know, usually meditation or just writing those little lists are just kind of my two go-tos when I'm struggling. You know, really with anything. And so just, you know, during the day, I'm going to have great emotional periods. And during the day, I'm going to be kind of like, you know, complaining I don't like stuff. And, oh, you know, this person cut me off in traffic. You know, just really trivial things that are not important, but that they're, you know, our minds can get so trapped on just all this little stuff that doesn't matter. You know, just money and bills, or, you know, just whatever, our favorite sports team loses, and it's like, does that really matter? No, it doesn't matter. You know, what matters is, you know, I'm healthy and my children are healthy. We have our basic needs met. You know, and so just, you know, a daily reminder of those things. You know, and for me, it's writing it down and putting it on paper. Mm-hmm. And for me, like, if I say something, it's not really, you know, it's real and the other person perceives it, but it just, for me, it's something just, and it's pen and paper or pencil and paper. I don't take notes. For me, it's just that physical act of writing it down. What am I grateful for? My son, my daughter, we're healthy. Just, and that takes 5 seconds. Mm-hmm. And that can really just snap. Yeah, you know, I know that can snap me out of one of those, you know, just little pity parties. You know,
so the next time I find myself losing it over the fact that I can't find any ink for my inkjet printer or something like that, you know, you ever had one of those moments that you realize, like, why am I so upset about something so ridiculous? This doesn't make any sense. But it seems like we're both laughing. I think it must be a common thing, you know, where humans are programmed to sort of be worrying about something, and in the absence of something, we just invent something. And maybe this trick you found of writing down the things that we're grateful for is a way to break out of that and not be so worried about stupid things that don't matter.
Yeah, and I'll laugh at, you know, then we can laugh, or I'll laugh at myself. And, you know, someone once told me, they're like, you know, think about all the things you've worried about in your life up to this day. You know, 99% of them never came true, probably. And, you know, the other 1%, well, it's over and you're still here and you're still alive, you know, kind of framing it in that context. So it's like, you know, it's tough in America and modern society. And yeah, not having ink for your printer when you need to print something that's, you know, quote, really important, you know, but a day from now, it's not going to be. So just kind of losing the present moment focus. I do it all the time. You know, it's like, oh, my phone battery's going to die. Like, I can't survive without it or something. Or,
yeah.
You know, it's just those little. But I think for me, like, if I go through a full day of that and don't meditate or don't, you know, take a break to recenter, yeah, you know, I might not sleep as well. And if I go through a week of not meditating or not doing gratitude lists, you know, all those little things just build and build and build and build. And for me, there was always, you know, I wouldn't express them because I didn't want to be a complainer necessarily. Mm-hmm. So I would always internalize it all, and then eventually I would just blow up. And in the past, my blowing up would be, well, I'm going to go get drunk, or I'm going to do a bunch of drugs, or, and then I'm going to yell at somebody and, you know, really tell them how I feel. You know, instead of having just a, you know, discussion with them, or just realizing, hey, it's over. You know, maybe I don't have to have a conversation with them. Maybe I need to forgive them. Maybe I need to forgive myself. So yeah, it's just like the little daily, you know, maintenance stuff of, and meditation could be a minute. It's, I trained with monks, and it was, you know, pretty rigid, and I wouldn't say rigid, but it was, you know, it was minimum 40 minutes, and we do sitting meditation and walking meditation and go on retreats. And, you know, not everybody's willing to do, you know, a 72-hour, you know, meditation retreat and eat one meal a day in silence and not talk for 3 days. Mm-hmm. You know, for me, I found, you know, I was so extreme on the other stuff that I had to go extreme you know, down the meditation path. But, you know, after coming back, now it's like, you know, 1 minute of meditating or 1 minute of just writing, hey, I'm glad my kids are happy today. And then all of a sudden, all those little daily problems just go away.
That's awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
So I wanted to talk to you about your podcast habit. And, you know, this is something that really intrigues me as well, because it's one of the things, I don't really care much for reading a lot of blogs. I read some, but not many. But the podcast is almost like an obsession for me. Like, I can't, you know, my phone, I can't take any more pictures with my iPhone because it's using so much space to store all these MP3 files for my podcast. And so what part have they played in this recovery for you?
Yeah, you know, I think we're pretty similar. I'm an information junkie. You know, it's almost like an addiction. You know, it's like if I'm interested in a topic, I could literally research it until, you know, my eyes bleed, mm-hmm. and, you know, the ears and everything. And, you know, just that wanting to learn more. So, yeah, podcasts were great. You know, when my diet wasn't that good, you know, when I'd be relatively healthy, I could read, but then it would get to the point where, you know, I don't really have the ability or control to sit down and focus on reading a book. So I went to some Audible books, which, you know, really aren't they're better, I guess, in some extent, but, you know, I just zone out. I would zone out and I wouldn't pay attention. Just like, you know, I could read three pages and be like, I don't remember anything I just read. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, well, I had a bowl of pasta before I did it. So, yeah, so the podcasts have been huge, and I think, you know, I just started with, like, the YouTube videos, and then all of a sudden I'm like, these podcasts are kind of cool, and then I found all the same people in just the interview format, and you know, I drive a lot for real estate, so instead of listening to the radio or listening to the news, you know, things that really aren't that, you know, influential in my life, I found that, you know, the podcast, you know, were real people talking about real things and people telling, you know, real stories and being open and honest and vulnerable. And then, you know, it's almost kind of like developing a relationship with the podcast host, even though I don't know them. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you get interested in their lives. And, you know, I think a lot of the things on podcasts are very, more health oriented and honest and straightforward, and, you know, most people that do it are not making money and they're probably spending money to do it, so they've got, you know, they may have some financial motivation at some point, but there's a lot of time and effort that goes into doing those, because I've looked into doing it, and you know, so there's some kind of altruistic thing I think about most people that do podcasts. They really love their topic, and it shows just in the quality of a lot of them. It's almost, to me, yeah, it's like an addiction almost. It's like, you know, refresh it, I'm like, oh, there's a new one from so and so, and there's this and there's that, and they're like, how am I going to listen to all these? And my photos are full because I screenshot all of them. Like, when there's good stuff, you know, at like the 40-minute mark, they said this. And so I've got like thousands of photos.
Oh, really?
And I haven't even gone back to even, you know, research, because you know, there's just so much stuff in them. And yeah, it's just from an information standpoint, you know, for really anybody or for the new generation. I think, you know, I see with my kids, like, they're not interested in TV. We don't watch TV. You know, that younger generation is kind of sees through that old media paradigm as kind of being just a method of selling people stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, and the content's not good. Mm-hmm. And, you know, with YouTube videos and vlogs and everything, people want real, you know, they're on the social stuff and the podcast. They want a connection. They want to connect. You know, we really only connect with real people, usually through suffering. So, you know, when somebody's out there putting this facade on and it's all prepped and perfect and everything, I don't think younger generation is really, like, getting into that as much. So it's, podcasts are huge. I just, you know, every once in a while I'll listen to music, you know, but it's almost like, I just need more information, or, you know, I want to learn more about this person, or, yeah, it's great.
And have you heard, I know Simon Hunter, who I know is a podcast listening, thank you for this. It's there's an app called Overcast.fm, and I'll link to this in the show notes. It's an app. So on the iPods, the iPhone, the native app for playing podcasts, there's a speed setting, which is pretty good. And I find that 1.5x, so you're listening to the person talk faster than they normally would, 1.5 times as fast, is pretty good. But the Overcast app allows you to like decide what speed at a much finer level of granularity. And so you can tune it in just right for a particular person's voice. You know, some people talk quite fast and others talk much slower. And so that's super cool. And then also what it does is it removes the silence. So if somebody pauses for a moment, then the app just deletes that space. And so you can get through far more podcasts far more quickly, which I think is an awesome hack. So I'd highly recommend that so that you can listen to me talk like a chipmunk.
Yeah, I'll have to check that. Well, yeah, I've tried that, you know, 1.5x or 2x, and it works on some people.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, especially like Chris Kresser, he talks a little slower. So yeah, you could put him on 1.5, and it, you know, but other people, all of a sudden it's like chipmunk. And, you know, I've gotten good. I mean, I listen to pretty well-rounded group, and, you know, I'm like, well, okay, well, this guy's going to have 10 minutes of ads at the beginning, so I already know I'm going to fast forward through that, you know, which maybe isn't good for them, you know, selling to advertisers, but, you know, I don't need to listen to somebody, you know, pitch their book for the 5,000th time. I probably already own it, you know, so, and I think podcasters, I guess, with the advertising are getting a little smarter. They're throwing it in the middle now, you know, just like TV, you know, so, I know you don't do ads, but yeah, time constraint is a little bit, you know, trying to listen to all these things. So, you know, I've gone through some and I'll listen to some for a while and then maybe I won't be so interested in it, or, I try and keep it relatively well-rounded, you know, most of it's health stuff, but, you know, some of it's not, you know, some of it's for entertainment, you know, things like that. But yeah, it's really filled a lot of time, especially driving, which would necessarily be wasted time.
Right.
Or I would just be entertaining myself with music or, you know, listening to the news, which to me would have probably a negative effect.
Right.
So yeah, it's been awesome. It kind of reminds me of before the TV, everybody used to sit around the radio.
Right.
You know, it's like, there's just something to it when you're not watching it. So it's great. Yeah. It's a huge part of, you know, my self-education, and highly recommend it really to anybody. So.
We're probably preaching to the choir here, aren't we? Because everybody's already listened to the podcast. And yeah, I was delighted. Yeah. So in your book, you list the podcasts you listen to, and I was one of them. So I was kind of like, it's kind of a weird feeling of fulfillment, you know, when you not only do you work with someone and they start feeling better, but also they write a book and mention you in the book is really quite something extraordinary. And I'm wondering whether you're going to end up following a very similar path, because you have done the functional diagnostic nutrition course, which I did and very much enjoyed. How did you find, how's your experience with that course been?
Yeah, you know, it's been a good kind of 101 level where I'm at. I wouldn't say that I could have learned this science on my own, but, you know, just knowing the science probably, you know, has to have some context and how to correlate it with, you know, how people are feeling and all those things. So I've been able to work with, you know, a few clients, and, you know, it's going really well. What I'm finding is, you know, a lot of it, the test results, help correlate and tell people why. And for me, it was kind of like a relief. Like, I didn't have to take it personal. And I'm finding that with clients that, you know, they may be overweight or they may be tired and they're beating themselves up about it. And to come in and say, hey, this is not your fault. But it's your responsibility if you want to feel better that you need to do these things. And here are these test results. And this is why you can't lose fat, or mm-hmm. this is why you can't sleep, or this is why you're tired and feel depressed. You're not a bad person. You know, you might be metabolically damaged. To me, it always kind of correlated with like something I learned in Buddhism, which was the Four Noble Truths. You know, it's kind of like, you know, there is suffering, you know, here's why you have suffering. There's a way out of suffering. And then you have enlightenment. So it's like the same path. It's, you know, you are suffering. Okay, let's figure out why. And here's what you do. And then you feel better. Mm-hmm. And it's just like that Four Noble Truth path kind of health. And I think a lot of, you know, a lot of healing can happen, you know, not only physically, but mentally and emotionally. And, you know, when we come at it from this way, and that's why I always kind of try to, you know, what I did with myself is have this kind of integrative model where, you know, spirituality, emotions, the mental and the physical, you know, having to work on all four of those. And I find, you know, really probably the easiest way to get to people is through that physical,
mm-hmm.
You know, unless they have a really deep spiritual practice or they're going to counseling, and all those things are good. But what I found for me, until I was working on all four of those, because I'd really love to just do the physical stuff. You know, I get really geeked out on the science and the training and all that. But if I ignore, you know, meditating, or I ignore, you know, writing, or, you know, my emotional health, or I ignore, you know, learning and my mental health, you know, then it really doesn't matter how fit I am or how low my body fat percentage is. My overall quality of life is not going to be as high. Mm-hmm. So, you know, but I think, you know, the easiest way is to come in through the testing. And, you know, and somebody could work on their spiritual life and their emotional health and their, you know, their intellect. But if they're 100 pounds overweight and they feel like crap and they can't sleep, and, you know, the mind is going to fail because of the body. You know, so just having those balance in those areas is really what I try and work on. And I get, it's funny now, you know, I get, you know, runners or triathletes, and, you know, most of the time I'm like, they're over fat, they're metabolically broken, and it's noble and honorable that they want to do an Ironman, or they want to run a marathon, or they want to run a 5K. But my answer is usually stop exercising.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, for some people, that's a relief. You know, they might not be as type A and driven. They just thought, oh, I have to run a marathon to lose weight. And I'm like, well, really, if you just walk 3 days a week and let's change all this other stuff, you're going to lose all the weight. Then you're ready to run. Everybody else is doing it backwards. We're going to go out and, you know, 50 pounds overweight and abuse our body by running horribly with bad form, and we're metabolically broken. It's definitely worse on the health. You know, kind of following a lot of, you know, like what Phil Maffetone does. You know, it's like, don't sacrifice your health for your fitness. And the two are not the same thing. And yeah, so it's probably not a message that sells a lot, but you know, the people that buy in, you know, my goal is I'd rather have them be happier. I don't care if they can run a 3-hour marathon or do a 9-hour, you know, Ironman, or, you know, there's so very few people that can do that anyway. You know, so from a business perspective, there's a lot of people that could just, you know, be a little happier and, you know, have a little more energy and have better relationships. So that's kind of, I guess, what my target is.
Mm-hmm. So if I'm a real estate agent with low testosterone that's struggling to lose weight and can't concentrate properly,
yeah,
can I come and work with you right now?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And where can people find you?
People can email me. You know, it's my full name, so it's DouglasHilbert@yahoo.com. You know, email me anytime. You know, I'm on Facebook, but I'm pretty active on Facebook. And again, it's just under my full name. Yeah, that's probably the easiest way to get a hold of me. And yeah, I can work with people, you know, really anywhere remotely. Yeah, do all the same testing and, you know, just help them get better.
Excellent. Yeah. And the book is on Amazon. I'll link to that, Letters to My Son, Choosing Yourself First. It's a fantastic book. I really enjoyed it, and I'm quite flattered to be in it. And,
no, it was great. Yeah, you were a huge, like I said, I mean, if I hadn't got, you know, I was sober, but I still wasn't healthy. Mm-hmm. And I don't think, you know, with a lot of the work that we did together, I wouldn't really have been able to have the mental energy or focus or clarity or just overall well-being to even write the book. So, you know, just, yeah, I mean, mentioning you is one thing. I mean, but it's like definitely your working with you and your help was one of the huge, you know, catalysts for me even being in a position where I could do it. So I have a lot of gratitude for that.
Well, thank you. No, I really appreciate that. That's wonderful. Wonderful to hear. So maybe I'm not capable of writing a book myself, but perhaps I can help somebody else write one. And I'll settle for that.
Yeah, you know, that just, yeah, the helping people thing. Yeah, I get a lot of people, I'm like, well, I can't do what they can do. But if I can help them do what they do better and they can contribute to the world and make the world a better place, then kind of that ripple effect has gone out. Whereas in the past, it was, I have to do all these things to be this whatever person. Mm-hmm. And now it's, you know, if I can just help somebody be a better parent or, you know, be a better spouse or just be a better person, you know, I might not know what the direct results of that end up being, but mm-hmm. you know, if they hold the door open for somebody and smile at them today, and then that person doesn't go home and, you know, kick their dog or have road rage, you know, so there's just this ripple effect of just helping people in a simple way. I think, like I said, I'll never know the effect of it, but if it's making the world a better place in general, then I think it's something I have to do, really. Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. Congratulations. Yeah, I'm so happy for you.
Thank you. Yeah.
Excellent. Well, this has been a great conversation, Doug. Thank you very much for coming on and recording with me.
Yeah, I appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah. Thanks again.
Cool.
Cheers.